This is a sermon from Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. Thank you for joining us. Learn more at wdmcovenant.org.
The scripture reading is from the Old Testament, Psalm 27, found on page 619. Read along with me, please. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? The evildoers assail me to devour my flesh. My adversaries and foes, they shall stumble and fall. Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though wrath rises up against me, yet I will be confident. One thing I asked of the Lord, that will I seek after, to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will set me on high rock. Now my hand is lifted up, my enemies all around me. And I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. Hear, Lord, when I cry aloud. Be gracious to me and answer me. When my heart seek his face. Your face, Lord, do not seek. Do not hide your face from me. Do not turn your servant away in anger. You who have been my help, do not cast me off. Do not forsake me, O God of my salvation. If my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will take me up. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Do not give me up to the will of my adversaries, for false witness has risen against me, and they are breathing out violence. I believe I shall see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord.
Take a breath in with me. The Lord is my light and my salvation. And let that out. Whom shall I fear? Do that again. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? I believe in holding, I don't have either of these in my hand right at the moment, but this is a metaphor, okay? I believe in holding the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other hand. That wasn't my idea, that was Karl Barth's idea. But I believe in holding these two realities together because I believe that the gospel that we proclaim speaks into the world in which we live. I think that we have to hold these two realities always right up next to each other. And it's always hard. And it's been another difficult week for doing that, so busy that I struggle to actually keep my hands on both of these things. There is the national and state and local news, as always, and my heart just continues to ache. And then there's been a whole bunch of extra Presbyterian news, because if you're a Presbyterian nerd like me, the General Assembly has been meeting in St. Louis, and there has been a whole lot of business to digest coming out of the General Assembly. So give me another month, I'll tell you what happened at General Assembly. And today actually is not so much about the news itself or about the particular goings-on even in any one of our lives itself. Today I'm thinking about that experience of trying to keep up, trying to keep up with all that goes on around us and the fear that I recognize when I do try to keep up with all that goes on around me. Now, actually, a big part of this fear is that thing we call fear of missing out. So, General Assembly happened, and it was super interesting, and they did important things, and they had important conversations, and I missed it all because I wasn't there, right? And so I tried to keep up, and you can't keep up without just being there. And then, of course, the World Cup is happening, and that's not really important so much as just interesting, but again, how do you keep up with that? And then a large part of this need to keep up is well, just distraction from other things that are uncomfortable or unsettling, and so we try to look at something else. But then there is that still larger part of fear, that is the fear that controls the narrative about how all of these events take place. Fear at the border, fear in Washington, D.C., fear in our conversations with each other. There's fear of the other, fear of being displaced, fear of an unfamiliar world that feels like chaos exploding around us. There's fear of the chaos that is brought on by our responses to that fear of chaos around us. There's fear of dehumanizing people. There's fear of the motives of certainly those who disagree with us, whatever we may happen to think at the time, and honestly, fear of the motives of some of those who happen to agree with us, but we're not sure we like why they agree with us. There's fear of physical violence, there's fear of poverty, there's fear of emotional trauma. There is fear out there, and when I slow down enough to recognize and acknowledge it, there's fear in here as well. And I think it's wise to slow down and acknowledge that at least every so often, because that fear tends to control us, whether we recognize that it's fear doing that or not. Before we even realize that we have a choice, that fear arrives and sets the agenda for what we will do in response to whatever situation we're encountering. And it takes work to avoid letting fear dictate my response. That's what the breathing was for at the beginning here. Taking that breath in, letting that breath out, getting a little bit of control over our bodies before we start to experience what we recognize is already true about our experience. So today's psalm is one of those that is ideal for holding in that hand next to the newspaper, because today's psalm was written in order to claim God's presence in the face of fear. Just like last week when we had a psalm full of enemy language, we've got another psalm full of enemy language this week. And so just like last week, if you missed that or it didn't stick with you, what this is for is to tell the truth about what we fear, to tell the truth about the experience that we have of living in a world where we don't always feel safe. Perhaps we often or even always feel at least a little bit unsafe. And so we acknowledge that, we say that in words as we read this psalm together, but we don't give those fears the final word. We place those fears in the context of God's love for us and for this world. And so today the psalm names who all of these enemies are surrounding the psalmist and then says, I will be confident, because I seek to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in God's temple. So what's that about? What does it mean for us to behold the beauty of the Lord and to seek to be in God's temple? Here's a hint. It does not mean that we have to go to some special worship space, although going to a special worship space can help. But the Old Testament insists that God is not limited to any specific place. The Hebrew covenant was always about rejecting the idolatry that God could be confined to some particular form or some particular location. Even the establishment of the temple as a specific place where God's name would dwell was always understood as a concession to our need for that sacred space, somewhere that can help focus us on God. And that temple location is revered by Jews and Christians and Muslims, but all three of those religious traditions will insist that God is no more present in that temple or on that mount than God is absolutely everywhere else as well. Now, the New Testament complicates things because, of course, the New Testament, we understand, identifies a specific location for God's presence, and that specific location is the body of Jesus of Nazareth. And Christians identify Christ's presence with the cross, that ultimate place where Christ is revealed as God incarnate, where God's intentions for the world are made real for us. And that cross bundles all of human suffering and fear together in God's person. Sometimes we reduce what happens on that cross to punishment, but to talk about that only as punishment vastly underestimates what God's redeeming love is about and what God's redeeming love does in and for us as well. The cross is the intersection of God's love and grief and pain and healing, all wrapped up together. So when we hear that word temple, when the psalm invites us to turn our attention to God's presence and uses that word temple, I invite us to look at the cross and to seek the Lord's beauty there in that deeply complicated symbol. And the cross leads us somewhere. The cross leads us not to some perfectly peaceful, serene, everything is just as it should be placed, but the cross actually leads us into the lives of our neighbors who also suffer, into the lives of our neighbors who are also afraid, into the lives of our neighbors who also long for hope to be restored. So when I seek God at the cross, I identify my own pain and hope in what I recognized first of all as fear, but my fear is tied up with pain and hope and longing and love. And when I seek God at the cross, I also pray with love for that one whom I fear. For whatever the cause of my fear may be, I can identify the pain that is wrapped up, not just my own pain, but someone else's pain, that is wrapped up in the cause of what it is I fear and worry about. And I can name their hope as well, right alongside mine. And I can hold us both in the presence of God's love. So let's try that. Whatever fear has stuck with you most as we have sat here together with that, I invite you to practice here holding that in the presence of this cross or of the cross, however you need to picture that. So take another deep breath with me. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? You have an answer to that. I invite you to picture whom or what you fear. Allow that fear to sit with you for a moment. This is an uncomfortable step, I'm sure, because when we recognize what we fear, we want to act or we want to distract ourselves from it. We want to push that away, and that's normal. But allow that to just be there. Looking at that fear didn't create it. That fear was already there. So allow your attention to come back to that fear, but know that you are safe. You are safe right now. And now allow that light of Christ that shines maybe from that cross, allow that light of Christ to envelop you, to surround you. If you're visually oriented, looking up at that cross can help. If you've got some other image in your head, well, you can welcome that image. But feel God's warmth, feel God's love surrounding you. That fear is still there, but God's love is surrounding you. So from inside that light, inside that love, look back out at that fear and let God's warmth embrace even that. So now what do you see? What hurts you about that fear? What is painful about that fear? God feels that pain as well. That person you fear, how are they also hurt? What fear led them to be fearsome? God holds their fear as well. Fear and pain, those are kinds of suffering. And so this is hard. And that's why we are together. But we remember together that suffering, confronted and engaged, suffering ultimately leads to hope. So I invite you to see hope. See what hope looks like from inside God's light. As you picture that hope, as you recognize that hope, you might hear an invitation to make that hope real somehow, perhaps in the life of the one you fear, or perhaps in some other situation. Or you might not. You might not hear something specific to do right now, but your prayer is still there. So I invite you to entrust that fearful situation to God, the God in whose love you are safe and whole and redeemed in Jesus' love. Amen.